another fantastic week in the world of tennis. This is the ATP podcast, and are we at 98? We're on 98. We're on episode 98. The countdown continues, and I don't know if we need to like bring out a big cake or what do we do for episode 100? Should we film episode 100?
Hey, let's go.
I think that might be the way to go. I think releasing it on video would be really cool. Maybe we'll do that. I haven't even told you. The furniture piece that's going to go where you sit comes in tomorrow.
Let's go.
So that will officially be where maybe I'll even sit over there and we'll do the podcast that way. So things are coming together.
Can't wait to try it out.
Yeah, things are coming together here. In other news, I have not been playing tennis. How have you been?
Oh, I'm good. With the team, just getting ready to talk about the podcast.
Awesome, awesome. All right, man. Well, some big, triumphant, incredible things have happened, but it's also, in my opinion, not been a crazy busy week in tennis either. Do you agree?
Pretty much, yes.
Okay, talk to me, man. What's been happening?
Okay, we're going to start with the women. We're going to start with Ons Jabeur. She ended up winning Madrid. She is at a career high number 7 in the world. She is from Tunisia, and she made history, first player from that region to make it into the top 10.
Okay.
What are your thoughts?
I almost want to ask you what your thoughts are, because a few things. These are my initial reactions. Did she make it in the top 10? Because after you leave the top 3 or 4 players in the world in the WTA right now, there's a bit of a drop off. And does that take away from her accomplishment? Is there like a little asterisk on her top 10 accomplishment? Or is she just playing that well this year?
She is playing well. She did have a really good result in Dubai. What I do know for sure is that she definitely took advantage of all those players in the top 10 not making it so far.
Yeah.
So she was the best of the rest for sure. But she did take, she did took advantage. And sometimes that's good enough. We know about Emma Raducanu. She didn't beat anybody either. And she took advantage of her draw. So
yeah. And at the end of the day, I do believe it's not your fault if other people don't make it, you know? All you can do is beat the players in front of you and keep moving forward.
Right.
You can't be upset about players that everyone wants to win it not doing it.
Exactly.
So, congratulations to her for sure.
Yes. She deserves it for sure. Now we're going to stick with them, with the WTA. There was a little bit of a scheduling conflict, and Alcaraz match was first.
Alcaraz.
Then it was then it was Jabeur. The women's final was in the middle, and then it was Zverev and Tsitsipas. After the Alcaraz match finished, it was Jabeur and whoever she played. I forgot at the moment. But the point is that everybody left. Nobody really stayed to watch the women's final. And then when it came for Tsitsipas and Zverev, they all came back.
Wow.
Now everybody's been ridiculing the WTA for not prioritizing the scheduling. What are your thoughts on that?
What is the criticism exactly?
They thought that the WTA has done a very poor job on scheduling. And they didn't think that they should have played that match second.
I don't think that's fair. I think that the WTA doesn't deserve criticism for that. At the end of the day, some players have hype, some don't. You know, if you're going to have a player that's been a bit under the radar make it to a final, you're going to have a final that fills less seats. That's just what it is. That's men or women. That has nothing to do with anything, you know. Ultimately, Alcaraz and Tsitsipas, maybe those could have swapped, but that's an ATP decision, is it not? I mean, maybe you can make the case that Alcaraz would have filled more seats, had more hype, and so they should have saved that for last. But the WTA match, going where it went, is perfect, in my opinion. I think that putting it second, I mean, because you could have made a case that a final should go last, right? And that being because it's a final, but they were at least gracious enough to not make it go last if they knew it wasn't as hype.
It's a tricky situation there.
Yeah.
Because technically speaking, if you put the women's final first, it's a final.
Yeah.
These are semifinals. People could say, wow, that's really rude.
Exactly.
To whereas now you have to look at it the other way. Alcaraz is, they're in Spain.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're going to want to watch Alcaraz versus Djokovic.
Yeah. Obviously. That's a no-brainer, yeah.
Right. So if that's early game and these other matches are later, mm-hmm. obviously they want to fill the stadium for that match. Mm-hmm. So technically speaking, if common sense, you probably should have put the women's match first. Mm-hmm. Then in the, let's say the middle of the first set, then people start coming in, mm-hmm. waiting for the Alcaraz Djokovic match.
Yeah.
And now it's getting all the views that it deserved.
Right.
So that should have been it. Yeah. But here, technically speaking, also, it was Feliciano Lopez's fault. It's the tournament director who chooses when they play, where they play. So
I think putting the WT match sandwiched in the middle is diplomatic. I think that it shows a sign of respect for it being a final. But it also shows awareness that this is not a headlining match.
Especially when they're in Spain.
Especially in Spain. Now, where I think they dropped the ball specifically is you said Tsitsipas and Zverev played last.
Correct.
That should have been the first match of the day. Alcaraz and Djokovic should have been the last match of the day. And then still keep the WTA match in the center. That would have been perfect. But, you know, they screwed up there. That's a Feliciano Lopez / ATP situation.
Right.
Unrelated to the WTA. So, unfortunately, this happens in tournaments too, you know? I mean, sometimes the finals are a bit flat. This happens in the men's Indian Wells. You know, we've seen somewhere like it's an Isner final, and maybe it's not the same as when it was Federer versus Nadal in the semis, you know, and things like that do happen. But, you know, there was a U.S. Open where all the tickets sold because they thought Serena was going to the final.
Right.
And, you know, we've seen these situations happen both ways where WTA sells more seats or ATP sells more seats. This is one of the few sports where the women can outsell the men.
Oh,
you know,
for sure.
So I think that this is a very small hiccup. This isn't a major mistake.
Right. And we'll keep talking about scheduling a little later. Mm. But now we're going to talk about Iga. She came back. She took a break from Madrid, winning 3 or 4 titles this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to look it up just to make sure. And she's back. She's still winning. Has that consecutive wins going. Mm. Obviously, she's the favorite to win the French Open. This is her surface.
Yeah.
Do you see anybody contending against her?
Only herself, honestly. At this point, I mean, this previous tournament itself was, for me, almost reinforcing the fact that none of our juggernaut athletes are real threats for Iga. They can't even, you know, really blow through some of the players outside the top 10. So I think that she's my favorite for the French Open, and she should be the undisputed favorite for the French Open. Now, obviously, you know, anything can happen when you're on a run this long. It has to end eventually. I just couldn't tell you who would end it. Not on clay.
Now, we do know Simona Halep is a favorite as well on clay. She's
Absolutely.
Made many finals. She now is under Patrick Margiulu.
Yeah.
Do you think she can give Iga a little bit of competition?
She is my second pick, but in my personal opinion, if Iga continues to do what she's been doing, where she's striking and spreading the court open by taking it early and moving that ball well with that topspin and that lasso shot, I don't think Halep has an answer for that. And hopefully Halep is on the practice courts right now prepping for that specific shot and that specific lack of time being given to her, because Iga's going to make that clay court feel a lot smaller. That's what her play style is doing right now to players. And Halep already doesn't hit large, which means she's going to have to play the up and down game and a lot less of the left and right game if she wants to beat Iga.
Yes.
If she can manage that, you know, work the drop, work the lob, play the scrappier ball, she has a shot. But that's the only way. And that's to me, that's a very dangerous game to play. The cat and mouse game with someone who's really ripping a short ball well can be scary because you have to hit perfect.
Right.
So I look forward to them facing off. I hope they're on opposite sides of the draw because I think they'll both go deep.
Yes. You have to. Halep's biggest weapon is her movement.
Yeah.
But getting in a 20 stroke rally with Iga with all that top. It's not smart. She's going to have to be able to put some shots away.
Exactly.
And Iga's just a great mover. And her topspin shot's amazing.
Yeah.
So I don't. Halep's going to have to change something up. Maybe go for a bigger first serve or something and try to get points here and there. For sure. Let's see here. Moving on. Let's talk about the movers of the ranking. Now, obviously, I just said Ons Jabeur hit a career high of number 7 in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But here we have the future is now. Carlitos Alcaraz, six in the world.
Unbelievable. Highest
ranking. We're going to get to his dominance a little later, but what are your thoughts on his career high ranking?
Let's have another conversation on top of that. So there are the ATP rankings or the WTA rankings, which are an accumulation of how many points you hold from your victories, right?
Correct.
Now, with this specifically, we know that Alcaraz moved up to number six because he's won consecutive tournaments where he's sitting on a nest egg of points. But that's not always necessarily his true ranking if we just talk about how well someone's playing. I remember not too long ago we were saying that Andy Murray's ranked number 50, whatever, but he's playing top 20 tennis, you know? So my question for you is, obviously Alcaraz is ranked number six, but if you just talk about his tennis game, what's his ranking to you? Because we heard Alexander Zverev say he was the current world number one.
Right now, I would have to put him there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So he's number six, which is incredible, but right now, today, he's the number one player in the world.
Correct.
I agree with that.
Yes. Now let's talk about his win. He obviously beat Djokovic, Nadal, and Zverev.
Which would probably be, if we talk rankings, those no matter what their numbers say, those are probably the top five.
Right. This is a six that he's the first person. He didn't beat the big three. That's amazing within itself. Mm-hmm. David Nalbandian beat Federer, Djokovic, and Nadal in one tournament.
Yeah.
The top three players of all time, arguably. But Alcaraz beat Djokovic, Nadal, and Zverev in one tournament. What are your thoughts on that?
Unbelievable tennis. Absolute wars. And we're talking about him beating Nadal on clay. That's an incredible feat. Then we're talking about him beating peak Djokovic. Two tiebreakers and a 7-5 victory there. Split sets. Incredible. And then we're talking about him beating a formidable, high-quality Alexander Zverev. Zverev is excellent at these tournaments. These tune-up clay events, he has a very great record there. So this is three people who should, if he loses to these players, we just go, that's okay. He's still on fire. And he beat all three of them consecutively. This is probably the greatest run I've seen this year in a tournament.
I agree. He also has four titles this year. Rio, Miami, Barcelona, and Madrid. Now, let's get a little bit off of Carlitos right now. Let's talk about Nadal. Mm-hmm. So, he lost, I want to say handily. He did win a set off of Alcaraz, but the way he lost was really ugly.
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you think he has a... we're talking about Nadal now.
Yeah.
Do you think he has a chance at the French Open?
Absolutely. So, here's the thing. For me, Nadal is still... I consider him tuning up his game and just prep. I feel like that was a prep tournament for him. And I feel like he's still in his preparation phase. And he's preparing himself for the French Open. Now, I do think things can change when you have to beat Nadal in five. I do think things can change when Nadal has a few more matches under his belt of momentum going into the French. And then he faces Alcaraz. So, with that being said, I think that... I still highly favor Nadal. I might even say Nadal's still my favorite for the French. I might even go as far as saying that.
I would say that too, because we have to remember, again, we've said this multiple times, but of all the clay court events, Madrid is the one that Nadal has won the least.
Yeah.
And it is in elevation. Mm-hmm. At the French Open, the conditions are perfect for Nadal's game.
Mm-hmm.
So I honestly think that Nadal is still going to be the favorite. And we do... As much as I hate Djokovic, Djokovic is a 3 out of 5 player.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard him say many times, "Oh, I'm down 0-2 in a 5-set match. I'm just getting warmed up," and he's proven to come back.
Yeah.
So can Alcaraz keep that level of play in a 3-set match or 5-set match against Djokovic?
Yeah.
That's the other question. So honestly, it's just hard to say.
Yeah, and you know we've. The last player we saw in this position was like a Dominic Thiem, which I don't know if that's a topic on your list or if you want to talk about him. But with Dominic Thiem, we saw him sneak a win here on Nadal prior to the French on clay tournaments. But then he wasn't able to close the deal at the actual French Open. So there's a possibility that we're seeing the same thing here with Carlito. He's going to go through the same thing where maybe he pulled out those, you know, tune-up clay events, but he's not able to fully deliver quite yet at the French. That could be the next phase in his career.
Right. Now, I am going to say this. Did you see the match, by the way?
Which one?
The Djokovic-Alcaraz match.
I saw parts of it.
Okay. Alcaraz does almost everything better than Djokovic. Mm-hmm. You can argue with me on that one, but his footwork, he moves slightly better to certain balls than Djokovic does. Mm-hmm. He is a little more explosive on the footwork. Mm-hmm. He even has better drop shots than Djokovic.
I was
going to
say, his drop shot might be the best on the tour right now.
Djokovic is in trouble right now with his number one status. We have Medvedev, who is similar to Djokovic's play style. He's more of a machine, mm-hmm. and Djokovic can't penetrate his defenses. Mm-hmm. And then we have Alcaraz, who's just an offensive juggernaut and just hitting through Djokovic.
Yeah.
And everything Djokovic hits, he's getting to it with some. Mm-hmm. So I don't know right now. Djokovic could be in his last leg for that number one spot.
Yeah, and it cracks me up because this didn't have to go this way for Djokovic. He could have got the vaccine. You know what I mean? You know, he had that window of time where there was no one. And now there's someone.
Right.
You know, there's people. You know, now Stan Wawrinka's back. You know, all these dark horses are there. Zverev's there. Stan Wawrinka's there. Alcaraz out of nowhere. Nadal's back. Now, the French Open doesn't seem so casual as the Australian did. Maybe the US Open. You know, these tournaments where we didn't really have like a wall of people stopping him. So it's a little disappointing if you're a Djokovic fan to go through this, because now he's got to play out of his mind. And before, he just had to do what he was already doing.
Correct.
So
Djokovic also stated in his press conference after losing to Alcaraz, he said, Alcaraz is the future, but at the same time, he's the present. He's now.
Yeah.
So that's what he said about Alcaraz as well.
It's respect.
So that means a lot for sure. Now let's talk a little bit about Djokovic. After reaching the semifinal in Madrid, he has 72 semifinals in Masters 1000s. He's only behind Nadal in that stat. What are your thoughts on that?
Say that again. Say the record again.
So Djokovic has reached his 72nd semifinal mm-hmm. in Masters 1000s. Mm. Only Nadal has more than 72 Masters 1000 semifinals. What are your thoughts on that?
He's going to surpass Nadal, I would assume. And, I mean, that just speaks to his consistency, you know. I assume all these little records like this, these oddball streaks, runs, records, and stuff are going to be owned by the big three for as long as anyone can remember. You know, unless there comes out some guy who's as dominant as they are without any competition, there's no other way. So,
yes. That speaks of the consistency of Djokovic for sure.
Yeah.
Now going back to Alcaraz a little bit, he is only the fourth player to beat Nadal and Djokovic in the tournament. So Federer did it, Davidenko did it, Roddick did it, and of course now Vandian did it.
Yeah.
Not even Nadal has done it.
Jeez.
Beat Djokovic and Federer. I mean, Djokovic, well, obviously he can't play himself. Sorry. Yeah. But yeah, so... I think that's amazing.
Not even Murray's done it.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go. So here's something. Here's a little stat for you. Let's see. Let's see if you can answer this one. He's the first player, Alcaraz. He's mm-hmm. the youngest player in 17 years to beat the current number one player. Do you know who was the last person, youngest player to beat the current number one? It happened about 17 years ago.
Oh, 17 years. That would be in around 2010. Is that it?
2005.
Oh, Federer. Oh, no. Or Nadal.
Correct.
There we go. Nadal. 2005 is Nadal.
Yes. And of course, the reason why I brought that up, all these comparisons between Alcaraz and Nadal, that'd be an easy one, right?
Yeah.
Do you guess who Nadal beat? Who was the current number one that Nadal beat?
Not Safin. In 2005, Federer was the number one in 2005.
Correct.
Yeah, Federer was the number one.
So I thought that was pretty good.
The Federer run was in 2003. Yes. So, okay.
But in 2005 is when he won the U.S. Open. He won 2005, 2006, 2007.
Yeah.
He just had that was his peak, honestly, in my opinion. Moving on, we're going to talk about, does Vera really lose? Mm. Now we're gonna talk about this. Okay, we just talked about the schedule, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so when Zverev and Tsitsipas played, it was past 11 o'clock Spain time. Mm-hmm. So they finished around 1:30-ish in mm-hmm. the morning. Then he had to do his physio stuff. He had to do the commitments with the media. He didn't get to bed maybe around 4 a.m., 4:30.
Goodness gracious.
And then the championship was the very next day, almost less than 10 hours after he finished with his obligations with the media. So do you really think that Zverev lost to Alcaraz, or do you think it was a scheduling problem?
I'm going to say both. I do think that that's a disadvantage. That's for sure. There's no way around it. But also, he kind of vocalized, he kind of manifested, in my opinion, defeat. He did a lot of talking about Alcaraz is the best player in the world right now. He's the number one. He's an amazing kid. He's, you know, he just a lot of mentality of, I don't expect myself to win this match. That's what I sensed from Zverev going into that match. And maybe he knew in the back of his mind that he wasn't going to be in peak condition for that match, and that's why he felt that way. But, you know, at the end of the day, part of what makes these tournaments so prestigious is the grind. It is the struggle of the luck of the draw, of the rest days, getting on the right side of the draw, getting the right opponents in your path, and all these things. That's what makes the victory so sweet and so impressive. So, was he at a disadvantage? Yes. Does someone have to be at a disadvantage every single tournament, and he's probably won some because of that? Yes. So, when you put in the grand spectrum, I think that you give Alcaraz that win.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. I would have loved to have seen him fresh, quote unquote.
Me too.
Maybe he would have had a bigger serve or something.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just think that
they will
on
meet
paper,
again.
Yes, on paper, especially on clay, the penetration of Alcaraz's shots are just too heavy.
Yeah.
So, oh, and another thing real quick before I forget, Alcaraz's kick serve, I've never seen Djokovic return the way he returned. He was backing up trying to return Alcaraz's kick serve. He had problems with it. He was moonballing the return. I never thought I would see that. So if Djokovic wants to beat Alcaraz, he's going to have to try to fix that problem for sure.
Yeah.
So we're going to move on now. Let's talk about the surprise doubles team in Rome. Now, this is actually funny. We have one of the shortest players on the ATP, Diego Schwartzman. Mm-hmm. He's partnering up with one of the tallest ATP players, John Isner.
Wow.
They actually took a picture together and everybody was just busting up. Isner was actually patting Schwartzman in the head a little bit, taking the picture. What are your thoughts on that double scene?
I mean, it's exciting. It's fun. I like it. That's a terrible team. I don't want to see that. Like, I'm not betting money on that team ever.
Well, statistically speaking, though, Schwartzman is top 2, top 3 returner in the ATP.
Absolutely. And then we have
John Isner, which is the 1 or 2 aces in ATP.
Look, I do think Isner's a phenomenal doubles player. Schwartzman, man, I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry.
No, you don't feel that?
I'm not feeling this team from a tactical standpoint. If I'm a doubles team on the other side of the court, this is exciting for me. Because I'm going, oh, yeah, we're just lobbing that guy. I'm lobbing Schwartzman all day long, and I'm closing to the net. You're picking on him. His wingspan shorter. His height's lower. His serve is weaker. You really have to just survive the Isner service games. And then make sure you get your first serve in on the Isner side of the court. And
right.
That's it. That's the remedy. So, yeah, this one, I'm not feeling it. There's too many variables and open spots on the court now with them together. It doesn't work.
Again.
Excitement.
With what I just said, with the best return, best serve, they may have something going on there.
They'd have to both be playing perfect tennis.
Yeah,
every time.
Right.
And you got to keep in mind, the problem with it is your theory would work if there was ad scoring, third set, you know, all those extra things were there. But when it's just like on a dime, no ad, 10-point tiebreak, third set, stuff like that, that puts them in more trouble, in my opinion, because they have less opportunity to capitalize on their strengths. So I'm not feeling this one, man. I like CC Pa Feliciano more.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
I like that more.
Okay, that's fair. Now we're going to talk about matches that are coming up. We have a third round epic match with the Stanimal versus Djokovic.
Wow.
Third round.
Legendary rivalry.
What are your thoughts?
Very exciting. This, for me, is a great opportunity for us to see Djokovic get repetitions against a man that he respects, which is perfect for him playing Alcaraz, for me. And this is also a great opportunity for us to see where Stan at really in his road to recovery and his road back onto the tour and getting ready for the French. Is he really a dark horse at the French Open? How is his movement really? How well is he opening up the court really on a guy where you have to really open the court up? We're going to get a lot of answers for both of these players watching this match.
I agree.
Very exciting.
Now, the other blockbuster one is going to be Nadal versus Shapovalov. Mm. Now, the reason why that's intriguing is because we know what happened in Australia. Mm-hmm. We know Shapo called him out saying, oh, I had a ton of respect, but I'm not feeling it anymore.
Mm.
Last year, I believe, Shapovalov gave Nadal a run on clay.
And that's also the player Shapo had his first major breakout against.
Correct. Mm. So what are your thoughts on that match? Who you got in that match?
So Shapo is a player that he's kind of got the Monfils syndrome. He's got the Delpo syndrome. I'm lying. Not Delpo syndrome. That's disrespectful. He's got the Monfils syndrome where on the right day at the right time, he could take out anyone. He's a massive action on his ball. He's a shot maker. He's a brilliant mover. It's just not there consistently for the length of 2 weeks sometimes. Now, he also has a chip on his shoulder going into this match. I don't know if we've seen him that way. And we also know that he doesn't have the fear or the overshadowing respect or the deer in the headlight syndrome like maybe when he played Federer or Djokovic, where we've seen him almost succumb to the moment.
He's not threatened by Nadal.
He's not threatened by Nadal. He's not afraid of lefties, and he's not afraid of high topspin. He's willing to leap up on that. His one-hander has a bigger strike zone than the Federer one-hander. He can take it much higher up. And his forehand is a spinny shot as well. He's got a good first serve. This is a great match for us to see how fired up. We know that fired up Nadal is a different person. I think we're going to see that as well. So I'm looking forward to this one.
Right. I actually think that Nadal could struggle. He's still not at 100% from what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And this could be a tough match for him for sure.
Absolutely.
Before we go on to the next topic, I'm going to talk about Djokovic a little bit more.
Okay.
He lost another sponsor.
Oh, wow.
Over $42 million sponsor. Yeah, the name of the company is UKG. It's a tech company that was working with Miami. They just merged with Kronos, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know if you want to mention anything about that. Obviously, his...
Do we know why or do we have any information?
A lot. There, people are speculating that it's because of Djokovic not getting the vaccine.
Wow.
So there's another sponsor lost. He was with them for a couple years and in Miami didn't have it. In Monte Carlo, where Djokovic played, he didn't have the patch. That's of the crazy. Company. I don't know if you want to say anything on that.
Yeah, it just... What do you think it's worth it? You know, to step... He's standing up for his beliefs, per se. Is this something worth $42 million, worth history, worth the greatest player of all time status? Is it worth it?
Well, you said it perfectly earlier before. It's he missed his opening when he didn't go to Australia.
Yeah.
Now we have Nadal on clay. We have Alcaraz coming out of nowhere on clay. Tsitsipas almost beat him. If Stan can show any sign, even 70% of what he can be, he can compete with Djokovic. This he missed his window.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to say other than that.
Jeez, man. What a guy.
Yes. So... Oh, and by the way, Alcaraz was the youngest player to win Madrid.
Wow.
So now we're going to talk ATP retirement. Have you heard of Gilles Simon?
Of course. He used the prestige.
Yes. He announced that he will retire after this year. Mm-hmm. He is 37 years old. He has a 14 ATP titles, a ATP finals appearance. He has two Masters 1000s, a career high of number six, and 498 career wins. What are your thoughts on Gil Simon?
I've never liked to watch him, but I've always thought he was a good counterpuncher and a good mover. I've always respected his game, but I was never big on watching it. Not going to lie. I have deep respect for him. I think he's a good player, but to me, he was just that standard baseliner, standard clean blocking ball, you know. He was the guy that if you're having a bad day, he'll sneak one on you. That's just what it felt like to me. But at the same time, he was that guy that you assume he'll beat pretty much everyone but the top 10. Anyone else, he's steamrolling over him. He, you know, he's a league ahead of everyone outside the top 10, but there's something missing for him to break through the Djokovic's, the Federer's, the Nadal's, maybe depending on what year we're talking about, the Berdych's, the, you know, all those guys. He's just missing the X factor. So to me, I think he had a phenomenal career. I think he was extremely consistent. I was seeing this guy's name in every tournament every year for a very long time. So, you know, congratulations to him. Not personally a fan of him as an athlete myself, but I do respect his career greatly.
He's the player that us rec players don't want to play because you can compare him to a pusher, quote unquote.
Yeah.
He's just a wall.
He's a wall.
So, as a matter of fact, I'll never forget this, that Djokovic made over 100 errors playing Gil Simon. He still won, though. Djokovic still won. So, that's massive respect right there.
Yeah.
But he's a machine. He just doesn't make mistakes.
Yeah.
And he'll run down every ball and will wait for you to make the mistake.
Yeah. That kind of game just drives me nuts. And you know what's funny for me? As, like you were saying, as a rec player, I hate to watch those people because I visualize myself getting beaten by them. You know, it's part of the reason why I've never been a Djokovic fan as well.
Yes.
I watch Djokovic and he just gives me PTSD. Watching him play, I just think of all the times I lost matches I should have won. Djokovic triggers me a little bit.
Yes.
And Gilles Simon is worse because at least Djokovic is a shot maker.
Yes.
But Gilles Simon is not a true shot maker. He'll hit a passing shot. He'll be patient. He'll wait for you to lose patience yourself. You know, he'll do all those things where you go for broke and just come to the net when you shouldn't have. And he hits right around you. He's got a few highlights hitting banana whip shots and stuff like that. He's got some moments in his career. But yeah, kind of like you said, that play style is just...
It's annoying.
It's annoying. It's not super fan favorite. You know, it's just clean tennis.
Right.
So, congrats.
Yes. Congrats anyway, yes. Now, we do have one more topic. This is actually huge. So, there are rumors ATP and WTA chairmen met at Madrid, and they were actually thinking about making Wimbledon sort of a exhibition, meaning no points, since they're banning Belarusian and Russian players. They think it's unfair. So, for example, Sabalenka made it to the finals last year. She's from Belarus. Can you imagine her not being able to defend her points and then dropping seed because Wimbledon is not allowing her to play because she's from Belarus?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So that's huge. Yeah. So the ATP and WTA said, well, we can just make it to where there are no points to defend, no points to gain. What are your thoughts on that? It's rumored right now. We'll see what happens.
Look, I think that is them, they're, what is the phrase called? They're playing chicken. I think they're playing chicken with Wimbledon. They're saying, we will remove prestige from playing for your tournament if you do not give everyone an opportunity. That's what it sounds like to me. And they're seeing how badly does Wimbledon care about this. And I think it's an interesting tactic because if they do it, Wimbledon's stubborn. That is a stubborn tournament. So there's a high possibility that the ATP and WTA come together, remove the point system from this event, which takes away half the reason that athletes go to it.
Correct.
And then we also still don't get those players there. Then it becomes, okay, how does this affect Wimbledon next year? and stuff like that. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see, because at the end of the day, if you're Nadal, why are you going to play in this?
Yeah, that's not your surface per se.
Yeah, why am
Save
I going?
Your body for the summer on hard courts.
If I'm Djokovic, why am I going to this? I'm going to save my body for the U.S. Open and get my prestige. Or on the flip side, if a lot of people drop out and you're Djokovic,
let's go.
I'm going, you know? Mm-hmm. So now we're not only are we taking away the incentives of the event, but we're putting an asterisk potentially on someone who does win the event and show up. So to me, it could be very slippery slope there. I'm hoping that they go through with this, they play chicken, and Wimbledon succumbs.
Yes, I actually like the tactic.
Yeah,
because I like it. Just stated Sabalenka was the the finalist.
Yeah,
and she won't be able to defend her points.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so I actually like the tactic, and maybe they will give in and say, all right, but we'll see what happens. So with that, we're done with the episode. I hope you guys were entertained.
ATP, look out for video coming soon. We will be on YouTube, and I will probably, we'll talk more about the logistics. I might release these as video on Spotify as well. Until then, it's been a pleasure. See you guys next time.